The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon. You are joining We the People Radio. There we go. Having a little volume problem here. Okay. We're all situated now. So we've had some little change in our lineup here. We've got some updates on stuff for you. But you're listening to We the People. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
No, you're not, because we couldn't hear you.
Hello.
There you go. And our ever effervescing engineer.
I'm Bob Martin.
Yeah, so there you go. You've got all the voices that go with the program. Okay, so we've had a little change to our East Coast programming. Here on the West Coast, you can hear us live Sundays from noon to 2. That's Pacific time because we're in far northern California. And then the show airs actually in its entirety, but they compress it to an hour and a half. So it's commercial-free. It's on the East Coast on the Conservative Commandos Radio Network, WNJC 1360 AM. That's going to be Saturdays from 2:30 to 4. So all that stuff's right on the front page of the website. There's also a really terrific phone number. So if you have people who like conservative radio and they don't have computer connection,
but they got a phone.
But yeah, but they have, you know, maybe unlimited long distance or whatever. The number's 832-999-1199. And the programs in the Conservative Commandos network just loop. So anyway, you can find all that at wethepeopleradio.us. So let's speed on to our guest. We have two guests today. Second half, we will be chatting about the First Amendment case that the Attorney General of California lost, actually, with Mario Lopez, the president of the Hispanic Leadership Fund. I think that's going to be a really super interesting topic. And then here in the first hour, we are chatting with Walt Hare, who I don't even know how to – I'm just going to read right off his site because there's so much to tell you I don't want to blow it, and I'm not an expert here, so I'll let Walt be the expert. It says here on the one article, he is the man who has had two sex changes. The incredible story of Walt, who became Laura, then reversed the operation because he believes surgeons in the U.S. and Europe are too quick to operate. And I read an article in Heritage that was written by Walt. I've linked all that on the webpage for you. And I thought, oh my gosh, he just said all the stuff that so many people are either wondering about or think already, but we're not allowed to say. So that perfect chance to give give Walt a forum and let him explain it. So how are you doing this afternoon, Walt?
I'm doing great. Great. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. I just exhausted all our information, so it's the rest is all you.
I can just go now. You've got all my information. I can just leave, you know.
No, we just got to the part where we don't know anything.
Oh, okay. All right.
So I don't know how you typically tell this story, but we're game for wherever you want to begin.
Well, yeah, I mean it's a hard story to tell. It's certainly relevant today.
Absolutely.
I started out like many people who suffer with gender dysphoria, struggling with gender identity at a very young age, and for me. It was at the age of 4 that this all started for me. So I was cross-dressing at the age of 4 and did so for, you know, many, many years. And one thing I do want the audience to know is that the vast majority of transgenders are not homosexual, and I fall into that category. And we heard Bruce Jenner talk about this, Caitlin, whoever. You know, he admits that, you know, he's not homosexual, and it seems to surprise people. But if we begin to understand that gender dysphoria has nothing whatsoever in the world to do with sexuality, it has everything to do with how we see ourselves, and then what we want to find out is why do we see ourselves as a different gender? And when we start looking at the research findings, we discover that gender dysphoria, according to the research findings, is a childhood developmental disorder where children, especially children, become confused and anxious about their gender identity, and that confusion and anxiety turns into depression that evolves into dysphoria. And dysphoria itself is the opposite side of euphoria. So what we understand is then gender dysphoria is a form of gender depression. So I struggled with that for many years, and until I did get married while I was struggling with the dysphoria at the age of 21, and was married for 17 years, lived in California, as a matter of fact. And after many, many years, went for psychotherapy to a, quote, gender specialist. In fact, the guy that I went to was the guy who wrote the what we now know is identified as the standards of care for diagnosing and treating people who suffer with gender dysphoria. So I went to a guy who was, clinically speaking, was probably one of the most well-read and well-known persons in the world. So he diagnosed me with gender dysphoria and recommended the gender reassignment surgery, which I waited 2 years after the original diagnosis and went back to him 2 years later to be reevaluated. And he said, yes, you're still suffering from gender dysphoria, and the only cure for that is gender reassignment surgery. And so I opted for the gender reassignment surgery. But what I learned later, as I studied psychology at UC Santa Cruz, to become someone who could help others with these disorders, is that gender dysphoria is not, there is no medical necessity for gender reassignment surgery, because according to the research, not according to Walt Heyer, but according to research studies from around the world, including Rome, Japan, the UK, Sweden, and Denmark, people with gender dysphoria are suffering from what they call psychiatric and psychological comorbid disorders that are routinely never diagnosed, and therefore, because they're not diagnosed, they're never treated. So somewhere between 10 and 15 years, people discover that they still have a dysphoria, but now they've altered their body and their life to such a degree that that's even more troubling than it was if they'd gotten the proper treatment to begin with. So that's kind of where I am today, and I have a website, sexchangeregret.com, that currently is reaching about 50,000 people per month. I do media around the world, from Russia to UK to Australia and every other place in the world. We reach 180 countries around the world because people are very interested in knowing what is the onset of gender dysphoria, and they're kind of puzzled by two things. One, that it's a childhood developmental disorder. Again, that's not my opinion. It's what the research studies show. And also that most of them are not homosexual. So that's kind of the, in a nutshell, the whole transgender story of where I am.
Hey, Walt, we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, I want to go back to, you know, you said you were four when this whole thing kind of manifested itself. And I'd like to talk a little bit about how you were supported or not supported in that decision at that age. What was your life like and so forth at four that sent you down that road? So we're going to come right back.
Yeah, we have a million questions. We just don't know how to ask them.
All right. If it's a bad question, I'll just say no.
Oh, okay. That's cool. Well, we try not to be weird, but, you know, we're curious. So we are chatting with Walt Heyer, and we'll be right back. You can find all Walt's information on wethepeopleradio.us.
Buildings reach up to the sky. The traffic thunders on the busy street. Pavement slips beneath my feet. I walk alone and wonder, who am I?
Nice. You are listening to We the People. We are here with Walt Heyer. And title of the article that I read that prompted me to get a hold of Walt is, I used to be transgender. Here's my take on kids who think they are transgender. And it's a story about a 9-year-old boy selling Girl Scout cookies. And I'm just going to speed to the end because that was the part where I was like, I got to find this guy. It says, the neighbor man was correct about one thing. The Girl Scout at his door was really a boy in a dress, just like I was a young boy who thought I was a girl. And, you know, it's just it's just ripped out of the headlines. We hear this all the time. So, before we went on break, Bill was asking you, Walt, a little bit more about when you were a kid.
Yeah, if we could, let's talk about if we can, when you were that age, what support or lack of support did you have to talk about your feelings and talk about you were?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I think we expect way too much out of a 4-year-old kid. When you start talking about what's a kid feel like, I mean, at the age of 3 or 4 or 5, children are looking for affirmation, they're looking for love, and they're looking for feeling safe. They want to feel safe. They want to feel like they're really cared for. And in my case, I cannot tell you how it started, but I started cross-dressing at the age of 4 while I was being babysat by my grandmother at her house. And she seemed to really be much more excited about me being a girl than she ever was about me being a boy. And she focused on this, and she said, this will be our little secret. And so it became kind of what we did for nearly 2.5 years when I was babysat by my grandmother. We cross-dressed. She even made me a purple chiffon evening dress. Now, in retrospect today, looking back, what I see now is that a young child that I was, a boy, that grandma's affirming this change of gender identity by helping with making me a dress, helping me cross-dress, was actually fracturing my male gender identity. So because she seemed to love the girl so much more than she did the boy. So there was, when you talk about feelings, I was feeling much more loved as a girl than I was as a boy. So obviously that would be something I would really want to migrate toward. If I was being loved more as a girl, why wouldn't I want to be the girl? So, so therein lies the start of dysphoria. You know, I became dysphoric about my male gender identity because my grandmother did not like my male gender identity as much as she did the made up female gender identity that was purely a fantasy and as she called it, our little secret. So once you plant these seeds in a 3 or 4-year-old child, and then nurture that seed just like you would growing something in your garden, and water it by giving it affirmation and support and even giving it some reality. You've started something that in the psyche is very, very troubling, because the person then is dealing actually with the old identity and the new one that's being affirmed. So there's where the fracturing and the brokenness comes. Now, when I started out as many years ago, and today there's no real healing. In California, you can't even go to a therapist and ask for help for gender identity because they've made it against the law. So, when I was young, nobody knew anything about it. I may have been one of the first, transgender kids, because it was, when I was cross-dressing, was in 1944.
Oh, wow.
Wow. So do you think what's going on now? I mean, you're hearing now where they're passing these laws where if you feel like a girl, you can use the girl's restroom. If you feel like a boy, you can use the boy. Do you think that's kind of playing into this same psyche of...
Just making everybody feel confused.
Just confusing kids at that age that, or down the road are going to be facing these same challenges?
Well, I'm not sure that it's confusing them. I think probably more what it's doing is affirming an ideology about a change of gender that in reality doesn't exist. Because, and I say that not because I'm trying to be abusive or harsh, or anything such as that.
Well, let's face it, you're not going to be able to say anything that isn't going to be harsh to somebody on this one.
I suppose you're right.
Yeah, I say something, I don't know exactly how to word it either.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. What we do know is absolutely impossible to change somebody's gender. Now, it's not impossible to make somebody look like they changed their gender. So that's kind of where we are. Now, so I think the bathroom thing, and one of the things that sort of really caught my curiosity of late is the fact that they call the bathroom bill anti-LGBT. Well, that is so off base, it's laughable, because if you take a lesbian as an example, all lesbians know what bathrooms to go into. They're not confused about going into the women's restroom. So, the L of the LGBT doesn't have a problem with any of the bathroom stuff. So then if you move to the G, which is the gay men, they don't have any trouble knowing which bathroom to go into. They know they're men, and they go into the bathroom. And then if you take the B of the LGBT, and, they're not confused about their gender. They just like dealing sexually with both genders. So they go into the right biological restroom without any problem.
I never thought about it like this.
Yeah, and the fact of the matter is that transgenders, like I was, I lived eight years as a transgender. I never had any problem knowing which restroom to go into because I was female Laura Jensen. I looked like a female. I never had any problem, never had any question about whether I was female or not. So it's not even any of the LGBT, it's not anti at all, because what the real issue is there's a group called gender nonconforming, and it is the gender nonconformists, which make up, this is such a minuscule...
microscopic.
Yeah, really.
...percentage of the population. When you think that transgenders make up 0.3% of 1%, it's so small. we're talking really small numbers. Now, in terms of gender nonconforming, it's a fraction. They represent a fraction of the transgender. So we're doing all of these laws to accommodate the smallest fraction of people who do not want to conform. They really do not want to conform to gender norms. And so it really isn't anti-LGBT, because the L, G, B, and T all know which bathroom to go into. That's pretty simple. But it's the people who don't want to conform to the label on the door that are causing these laws to be, you know, erupted. And so it's really odd that we would give such a small fraction of the population, I mean, gosh, it's small, and then give them the power over the entire rest of the population about who goes into what bathroom. So if we look at this, there's nothing anti-LGBT about it at all.
Yeah,
because it's all been spurned and started by people who just don't want to conform to gender norms. And those people, frankly, are not transgender, they're not lesbian, they're not gay, and they're not bisexual. They're a whole different group.
Well, they're probably
they're just people. They're just people with a solution in search of a problem.
Well, that's probably not the only thing they don't want to conform with either. I mean, let's face it; they probably don't want to conform with a bunch of different things, and that just happens to be a hot button right now.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I have linked. I've linked a handful of articles. It was not hard to find you on the internet. At all, not difficult. There's quite a bit. And maybe when we come back from this break, you could talk to us a little bit about some of the – I was curious about the pushback that you get. Because honestly, you know, after going through all this, it seems like, you know, it would be easy to just go live your life. And instead, you became very, very public and have I'm sure helped a lot of people. But you're a voice that is – that's really rare. I just was curious if there are other people out there speaking out like you are, and what kind of a reception you get, you know, everywhere. There's an article in Media Matters, and all you have to do is read down through the comment section. It's like, oh, wow, stupidity is alive and well.
Yeah.
So we'll be right back. And Walt, let me just figure out, do I say your name? Is it Hire or Hayer?
It is Hire, just like...
Yeah, hire you for
taxes.
A job. Sure. Like just like taxes. That's right. We should have landed on that the first time. Just wanted to make sure I was saying it properly. So we have Walt Hire with us, and he is an author and a public speaker with a passion to help others who regret gender change. His website is sexchangeregret.com. He has a blog at walthire.com, and you can find all of that at wethepeopleradio.us. And I hope you're listening with a pencil in your hand, because if you're not, you're going to miss everything. We'll be right back.
When I was young, it seemed that life was so wonderful. A miracle. Oh, it was beautiful, magical. And all the birds in the trees, they'd be singing so happily. Oh, joyfully. Oh, playfully, watching me. But then they sent me. Singing bird in the croaking toad. I've got a name. I've got a name. And I carry it with me like my daddy did. But I'm living the dream that he kept here. Moving me down the highway. Rolling me down the highway.
Welcome back. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We're here with Walt Hire, And he is now 74. He acts as a counselor to those who are considering sex change surgery and feels that the psychological vetting of patients before the operation is inadequate. And, you know, most of us can't comment on that, Walt, because we really don't know. So you're in a very small group of experts, really. But you take a lot of shots, I would imagine, for this.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, I don't counsel anybody. What I do is I provide research studies that are done by research organizations, colleges, universities, and others. I provide information to people who are considering the change and let them make their own decision about whether they feel it's going to be adequate for them or a good thing for them. And but I don't try to counsel them away. I just let the research work speak for that. But most of the people that I spend time working with or talking with are the people who've gone through it, and 8, 9, 10, 15, 20 years later said, wow, this was not a good thing, and they want help. So I don't, I'm not in the discouragement business.
No.
except to provide information so people can make an informed decision, which I was not allowed to do when I was told that I needed the surgery.
Right. Well, I guess because I was reading the dopes at Media Matters, and it was just, the whole thing was kind of, you already explained the LGBT thing in the last segment, and so this makes their whole article basically stupid, which is like most of their stuff, but a popular right-wing activist with extreme discredited views about LGBT people is making the media rounds. It's like, okay, that whole sentence makes no sense.
Yeah, see, I don't ever read that stuff.
That's probably good.
You know, I realize that, you know, this is what they need to do, but what they don't know is that, I'm a recovering alcoholic, 30 years recovery as of today, as a matter of fact.
Good for you.
And my sponsor and longtime friend is a homosexual, and among the group of people that I know, there's lesbians and others that are friends of mine. So the fact that someone would report that I'm anti, and I've been a transgender, and the fact that they're saying right. I'm anti-LGBT is just, I mean, it should be a Saturday Night Live skit rather than something that somebody could print.
That's what I mean. As I read this, I thought, wow, this isn't even close. But you had a hard road because you have kids and you were married at the, you were divorced just before you did the surgery, right?
That's correct.
I read several things, and so I don't want to get things sideways.
Yeah.
But
right.
And then you worked all that out afterward, you know, with your kids. I thought that part of there was one very long article that I've linked here on the page, and I thought your whole going back to your kids and talking to them about what you did and mending those fences, I guess, or building.
Right.
I thought that was great, actually. There are a lot of people whose parents should do that regardless of what they did.
Well, yeah, I think when a parent's really been very foolish and done things that have harmed their children, they need to make amends to them. And, you know, and sometimes it doesn't suffice for the children. They're still going to remain angry, but you still have to do what you can, and so I just don't want anybody else to go through what I've gone through. There, everything about from my life, from my perspective, and from literally hundreds of letters that I've gotten from people who've gone through the surgery has convinced me that in the long run, there is really nothing good about changing genders surgically and devoting your life to being a transgender. It has long-range implications that are just not very rewarding. Now, I will say that 100% of the people at the outcome of right after surgery, they're all very happy. You know, there is this tremendous period of happiness and joy and all that stuff that goes on. For each individual, however, that fades over time. And some people, I've had them write me and tell me that it went away at 3 weeks.
Oh, wow.
And I've had some of them write me, or I have one, not some. I had one specific one write me and say it was 30 years later. So anywhere in between, people come to realize that there's something about changing genders that will have a regrettable outcome. And that, I think, is a message that doesn't get out there. And the fact that if you look on the blog, and you'll see that the studies show that the vast majority of people who opt for a gender change have mental disorders. None of them are, you know, wacko disorders. They're just bipolar disorder or dissociative disorder or obsessive compulsive disorder or schizophrenia. I mean, they're all treatable disorders. That's my point. I mean, I'm not trying to treat them as being a wacko population. What they really need, rather than hormones and someone chopping off body parts, is actually some good, sound psychotherapy. But now what we have is people who are writing for these other opposing views are preventing anyone from really having access to good psychotherapy that would prevent them from having surgery. So that's kind of where I come from.
So what I hear you saying is you were...
Nice job, Dr. Bill.
Yeah. The unhappiness and depression that you experienced prior to your surgery went away after the surgery, but then came back a short time later. So that obviously told you that wasn't the problem. Now, how
right.
many... What's the, or do you know what the percentage of people that experience that same effect that go through what you went through, what percentage of people fall into that category?
Well, you know, there's two things that when we talk about this that are really important for people to kind of get their head around and dialogue about. First off, the transgender population as a whole, people who claim to be transgender or self-identify as transgender, 41% of them attempt suicide. So if we look at
Yikes.
That group, 41% will attempt suicide at some point during or after their transition. So if you look at that and then say to yourself, I don't know anybody who is happy with their life that's going to try to end it by committing suicide. So if, in my view, I look at the 41% as sort of the regretters who we cannot hear from on the radio. I happen to be one of the ones who attempted suicide, didn't die, however, so you are hearing from me. But, and then I've got a blog posting on my blog that shows that somewhere around 20%, according to some study, I don't remember which one it was because it was so long ago, that about 20% of the people regret the surgery. Now, there was a doctor, Dr. Charles Ilenfeld, who was one of the original people who administered hormones and therapy to some 500 transgenders over a six-year period during the 70s. And he said that a change of gender, and this is his words. Now, he was a homosexual activist and doctor helping transgenders transition. And he said that changing genders, and I quote, is only a temporary reprieve and not a lifelong solution.
Mm-hmm.
So that's from him. I don't think there's any real adequate percentages that you can put on how many people regret it. But I look at the reported 41% who commit suicide, attempt suicide, as regretters. Because they must be regretting it.
So that's 41% after the surgery?
Well, it's before and after.
Okay.
Anybody who anybody who identifies at some point will have said that they had attempted suicide.
Wow. That's a huge number.
That's big.
So, yeah. So if there's any portion of that people who are left, then we could say that, you know, it's pretty much a crapshoot from there on out how many people are really going to benefit from it long term. And I'll reiterate that everybody thinks it's really good the first several years. For me, it was 8 years. I know people have gone as long as 20 years. So what we're seeing in the young children who are being put on television and stuff, they may be getting a lot of affirmation right now, but we really don't know what the long-term outcome, if it's actually going to be beneficial to them to have been given TV shows and given such media focus or not. That still remains an open question.
Yeah, you know, and with this, nobody can say no to anything, and we've got to accept everything, no matter, you know, what it is. And I'm sure there are a segment of parents out there that think, well, I'm afraid to mess up my kid by telling him that this isn't reality, and you're not allowed to go to a counselor and sort that out in the state of California anyway. Is that common across the country, or is that just out here with us crazy people?
Well, it's starting to work its way through many segments of the country, but I think there's some people in different places that are starting to wake up to the fact and kind of learn that, you know, there's also a study that's on my blog that shows if we leave the children alone, 94% of them would actually grow out of their gender dysphoria if we just didn't encourage them toward a gender change.
Oh. If you just let them grow up?
Yeah, you just, you know, you don't buy them a dress, you don't get them little pink pumps, and you don't send them off to school and affirm that they're really somebody they're not. And, you know, I know that's not very popular, but the studies, and everything that I say, I can back up with a university or some organization. So I'm not just speaking off the cuff or trying to be harsh or anything else.
Right. There's
studies out there, and there's life stories like mine that back it up.
Well, when you grew up, was there much of a male influence in your life as a young child?
Yeah. I was sexually molested by my uncle.
Oh, well, that's not a good male influence.
Not exactly the influence I was looking for.
Yeah, and that's from the people who write me. There's a pretty good, not every one of them, but there's a pretty good percentage of people who are transgender that were molested or sexually abused as a young child.
Wow.
Well, right. See, that just goes back to your conclusion that they really need some psychological help. And now we've prevented that. Isn't that smart of us? We need to take one last quick break. We'll be back with Walt to finish off our thoughts. We have a lot of people asking if you were an only child and if you have brothers and sisters and, if, you know, all these things. You know, everybody's curious about all this, so maybe you could give us some rapid-fire information when we come back.
I can do that. I can do rapid-fire.
We can do Walt Lightning Round. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back.
You give your hand to me, and then you say hello. I can hardly speak. My heart is beating so. And anyone can tell you think you know me well, but you don't know me.
If it makes you happy, it can't be that bad. If it makes you happy, then why the hell are you so sad?
Nice. Welcome back. You're rejoining We the People Radio. We are here with Walt Heyer. Okay, Walt. So, what are some other things people need to know that we just don't know to ask you?
Well, yeah. I mean, when at the break you asked me if I had a brother. Yes, I do. He was raised or babysat by a different grandmother in a different part of Los Angeles. So he didn't have the same experience I did. And so it was a rather shock to him to learn what my grandmother did. In fact, he just can't believe it. You know, he didn't have the uncle experience. He didn't have my experience. And my uncle molested me because he found out that my grandmother had been cross-dressing me, and he thought that was, you know, I was a good target because I was a boy wearing a dress. So everything evolved from grandma cross-dressing me and making that dress. But if you want the story, because I'm self-supporting in all that I do, the book...
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
Kid Dakota and the Secret at Grandma's House tells the story. And then if you want more research information, the book Paper Genders, which is sold worldwide and has been reprinted in Italian and published in Italy, is a great book for resource information, as well as the other books. So more detail can be found in those books.
That's terrific. I did see that, and I did not link those. I linked a lot of links and put a couple articles on, but I will put your book links on there because that's a great idea. For people who just, you know, don't know anything about this topic, maybe don't have anybody in their family who's dealing with this that they know of, how can they be helpful? Huddled masses out here that are going, is the world gone crazy?
Yeah, it's very difficult to be helpful to people who are confused and struggle themselves. I would just plead with people to get informed so that when they talk about it, they're not reading off the LGBT playlist about what this is, because there's more than one playlist, and so there is a lot of studies that refute all the claims that the LGBT makes about transgender. So, that's my plea is for people. I always tell people, get educated. Don't take my word for it. Read the studies. That's why I've put so many studies in all my books. I link to all the studies so that it's not my word speaking. I'm more of a person who's pointing people to the studies rather than me making some outlandish claim. It's the research information that gives us the information that tells us there's something wrong. And this guy that did this, Dr. Hillenfeld in the late 70s said that he left giving hormone therapy and helping people change genders because he said there is too many suicides and too much unhappiness among the people changing genders, so I'm going to study psychiatry, and he became a psychiatrist. He's still a practicing psychiatrist up in New Jersey.
Uh-oh. Hey, Bob?
Hello?
Oh, there we go.
Oh, there we are.
It got really quiet there for a second. It was like...
Yeah, so did you get that?
Yep. Sorry. I think the NSA must have gotten a little scramble going on their tape.
It's really about educating people. People can't help someone if they're not well-informed about it. All they can do is follow what the TV is telling them, and, you know, and the TV is doing what we call... There's a psychological term for it. It's called flooding. And desensitizing by having ABC as an example, over 50% of their primetime content is LGBT oriented.
So yes, we've noticed.
When you have a population of LGBT comprise 3.4% of the total population, and then on television they have over 50% of LGBT content, you know that we're being brainwashed.
Absolutely. And you know, there are a lot of us out there who think that, but we're kind of not allowed to say it. But it's nice to get a little confirmation on this because it feels like sometimes we're living in crazy town.
Yeah. Well, you are.
And we got that from the expert.
Yeah, there you go.
Hey, thanks for taking time out of your travels today to chat with us. We'd love to have you back, especially if you'd like to promote one of the books in a little more detail or any of that.
Sure.
Thanks very much. We really...
thanks for being on, Walt. It was very, very, very interesting.
We've waded into water that was brand new for us.
Well, good. I'm glad I could do it. Thank you for allowing me the privilege to be on and speak about it and an effort to really help people. I'm not trying to hurt anybody at all.
Absolutely. Thanks a million. Folks, all you can find the all the information about Walt Heyer on our site, wethepeopleradio.us, his blog, links, and books.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. If you missed the first hour, you missed a lot. So you should go back to our website at wethepeopleradio.us and listen to that. This afternoon, we will have a commercial-free archive up for you. And let's see, our show airs Sundays live from noon to 2. We have a chat room open during that that time period online. And
on the West Coast.
On the West Coast, that's right. Got to point that out. And then on the East Coast, we have shifted to Saturday afternoons from 2:30 to 4. They're airing the program commercial-free, so they can fit it in an hour and a half. They had a little programming change during the week, so they moved us to Saturdays. And that is on WNJC 1360 with the Conservative Commandos Radio
Network. Okay, so we're not on Mondays anymore?
We're not on Mondays anymore.
Okay.
I know. We keep shifting. Well, if he finds a program that's Monday through mm-hmm. Friday, then he kind of moves us around because we're just one day mm-hmm. a week. So anyway, we've had a little shifting and changing, but you can always find us here on the website. And, you know, we always have good information for you, so you don't have to take notes during the show. Although last show, you probably needed to take notes. I thought that was pretty good.
So
last
Saturday,
hour.
2:30 to 4 Eastern time?
Check.
Okay.
Philadelphia, New Jersey.
11:30 to 1
here.
Pacific time, if
right.
you care to listen.
We're between the pencils and the shot glass, but not the Cupid doll.
That's Bill filling
me.
In as the jerk. for all those people who don't get the movie reference, you might be too young. That would be a shame for you.
Yeah.
All right. So now we've had our. That was
you
like
gotta
the,
know your Shinola.
That was like the ginger sure. in the Japanese food there. Now we're moving on. A different topic. We've switched from transgender regret to First Amendment victory. Dun, da, 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 with Mario Lopez, who is not the Mario Lopez of what?
Was it Entertainment Tonight or one of those
Mario,
shows like that?
Mario, where are you doubling?
Well, my alter ego apparently was on Saved by the Bell and now is on Entertainment Tonight or something like that.
Well, that's awesome. I hope they screw up and give you the residuals. That'd be fantastic.
Yeah
I'm waiting for that.
Still waiting for that check, right?
You just hold your breath. So I've got a little blurb here on you. It's kind of long, actually. I will not read it all because I'll let you give us the fun part. But you are the president of the Hispanic Leadership Fund, an advocacy organization dedicated to promoting limited government, individual liberty, and free enterprise. Well, imagine that. Sort of sounds like we're on the same page. And then I also was reading down here, prior to founding the Hispanic Leadership Fund, you were in the House of Representatives as executive director of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus, or conference.
Conference, correct.
Conference. Actually, I read that wrong. It sounded like you were trapped in the U.S. House of Representatives. I had to do a double take. I'm like, what? They're not allowed to do that. So tell us about, give us a little on your background. But we want to get to this this case because this is a good one. And obviously, they're so busy covering, you know, the circus, the presidential circus. Nobody will ever hear about this victory, it seems.
It's gotten a decent amount of attention, I'd say, considering, you know,
yeah,
as you mentioned,
the circus.
The presidential race is an ongoing, well, circus is a good word.
So. Yes, well, presidential circus.
Well, they made a show about it. There's a show called The Circus, and they have somebody who follows each of the campaigns, and they give a weekly update. It's on, like, I don't know, Showtime or something. I saw it once.
Yeah.
And it did kind of look like a circus. It was aptly named.
Yep.
So tell us about you. What's your background?
Sure. Well, I've been in Washington, D.C. a number of years involved in the political and public policy process, originally from California. And like a lot of folks, sort of fled that state due to the...
We're trapped here.
The deteriorating nature of the policies and the effects therein. But I've been involved for a long time. The Hispanic Leadership Fund is, as you mentioned, it's an African League organization that's national, based in the nation's capital. And we're interested in promoting public policy that supports liberty, opportunity, and prosperity, as you mentioned. And one of the things that we've been heavily involved in and monitoring over the last few years are First Amendment rights. Everyone's familiar, I think, to some degree with the fact that those First Amendment rights seem to be eroding in the last few years. Several instances, one sort of overarching theme has been the IRS and their targeting of organizations that the Obama administration and their allies have deemed, wrong on certain issues. And they've decided to use the power of government to go after these folks with whom they disagree. And this has been a rather unfortunate, sad trend that's been happening. The case that most recently, brought me to your attention is the free speech case out in California, again, with an organization with whom we're familiar with, Americans for Prosperity Foundation, battling the attorney general out there. What she wanted to do is she wanted to get her hands on the membership and donor list of that organization, and her supposed reasoning was to help, in her role as AG, to help prevent fraud, quote unquote.
Right. Oh, I thought she was going to send thank you cards.
She was going to send them all thank you cards. Yeah, good thinking.
Exactly. And so we know the real reason is because this has happened in the past, and it's already happened to donors of organizations like AFP and other. There's been intimidation, harassment, threats. They're names and addresses, home addresses in a lot of cases, business addresses have been made public, and people show up to their home, to their place of business, and basically intimidate them and harass them, and do all sorts of untawdry things, in order to basically because of their political views, that's something that we don't think falls within the proper scope of the role of government. And so we battled this on a number of fronts, and we were very happy to see that the federal court cited against Attorney General Kamala Harris in recent days, and are excited to have that First Amendment victory.
Yeah, and that was a huge victory, and considering it was California, probably a big surprise as well.
Well, it was a federal court, so, that's not necessarily always better. But you're right. I mean, had it been a California state court, it may have been a little bit different. This is really a very critical decision for folks out there. And I want to be very clear because, I've debated folks on the radio and TV and elsewhere, friends on the left side of the political spectrum that want to, paint this in a different light. And I just want to be clear for folks, for anybody on the record, that this is about protecting everyone's First Amendment rights. Whether you're on the left, on the right, Republican, Democrat, up, down, if your views are popular, if your views are unpopular, it doesn't matter. That's why we have a First Amendment, is to protect the free association and free speech rights of every single American. I think that that's an important thing because, we're losing something very fundamental, I think, in this country. It used to be, a lot of people could agree on the fact that, the old saying, I disagree with what you say, but I'll defend to my death, your right to say it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is going
away. We've lost
away,
that a
sadly.
Little bit, yeah.
Right, and that's unfortunate because we can have debates, we can have policy debates. You know, our friends on the left say, well, we want high taxes, we want low taxes. Okay, fine, we can debate that. We want this policy, they want that policy. Great. Let's have a vigorous, passionate debate on the issues. But one thing that we should not be doing is, you know, when one party's in office, to use the power and the leverage of government to go after political enemies simply because they have different views than the folks who happen to be in power at that particular moment. That's not something that we should try to replicate. That's more of a hallmark, I think, of third world dictatorships than it is of our democracy. And that's something that I hope that folks on there out there can agree with, regardless of what side of the spectrum they're on politically.
Yeah, and I can hear the left in the back of my mind screaming, money isn't speech, money isn't speech.
Well, I mean, we can leave that point aside for the moment, but honestly, didn't even have to do with the money is speech angle, because what they were trying to do is again, just go after this donor information. And we've seen, particularly in California, I mean, I mentioned at the federal level, the IRS, but particularly in California, back when the gay marriage debate, Proposition 8, statewide, initiative was happening there. I mean, folks were intimidated. Folks were harassed. There were death threats. There were death threats from the AFP Foundation of people involved with them in this particular case. And that's, you know, whether or not we want to talk about the role of money and free speech and what exactly that means. I mean, those are clearly, when you have intimidation and death threats, those are clearly lines that we should not be getting near. And I hope that line is never crossed, because that would be really, really awful, again, regardless of who would be the victim.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't seem to always translate well there, though. We need to take a really quick break here, and then we'll come right back. The case, what is the name of the case, Mario? I can't seem to find it on my note here.
It's Americans for Prosperity Foundation versus Kamala Harris.
Versus Kamala, okay, so it was versus her. And she is running for office, so for all the people who think that she's off base, she's a gun hater and obviously a First Amendment suppressor, and she's probably going to wind up holding a really big office here shortly, because... seems to be the
That's what we do in California.
Seems to be the way we do it.
Yeah.
It's a good place to be from, ain't it, Mario?
Well, I mean, there are a lot of things I love about being from there, but, you know. The
mostly just being from, though. You're excited about that. It's the from part. Oh, my gosh. We will be right back. You are listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Give a damn's busted. And if it's real, well, I don't want to know. Don't make notes what you said. So please stop explaining. Don't tell me cause it hurts. Don't think I know what you're thinking. I don't need your
Kamala Harris theme song there. I don't know what you're saying, but stop saying it. The only thing better than her being the Attorney General of California is that she's running for the state Senate seat being vacated by Barbara Boxer. Super sad. All right, Mario, how long has this case been going?
Several months, and it was finally decided a few short days ago, I think just over a week or something like that.
So this hasn't dragged out for 8,000 years? Like like a lot?
No, surprisingly not. The arguments were in, I believe, February. February, and yeah, it was pretty. It was pretty clear for folks who were looking at this case. I saw some of the transcripts and was told a little bit about how the questioning went, and it was pretty clear that the judge had some very strong questions for Kamala Harris. Questions that, frankly, they couldn't answer. For example, if you were promising confidentiality on this information, how did it become the case that 1,700 times you published supposedly confidential information on the Attorney General website?
That was an accident.
1,700 accidents?
Accident.
Yeah.
Wow, even puppies don't have that many accidents.
Not a dozen times. 1,700 or so.
I'm new.
I'm new. If you had a dog that did that, he would have been given away a long time ago.
Not where I come from.
Yeah, that's not. No rehoming?
No.
You can't make this stuff up.
No, but we can make fun of it. And that's really where we shine. Unbelievable. So what was their excuse at the very beginning? Like, what started this whole thing, and was Americans for Prosperity the only group they felt like they needed extensive information on, or was it a bunch of them?
Well, I mean, in her crosshairs are a bunch of organizations that she disagrees with. But, you know, Americans for Prosperity Foundation is a particular appealing target for them, because Charles and David Koch are among the group's founders. And so, you know, for our friends on the left, that's a...
You can't hate
giant target.
Yeah, you can't hate on them enough.
Right, exactly. And so I think that it was... They chose that for the, you know, sort of the political PR value. And then if they were able, you know, to win that case, and they're going to appeal, by the way, at least that's what they said, we'll see how it goes, but you know, that would of course just be the start. I mean, they would want to target you know, every group that they have political disagreements with, and I guarantee you that, you know, none of the leftist organizations, no labor unions, you know, nobody like that, Common Cause, People for the American Way, you know, they weren't going to be targeted. I can guarantee you that.
And so a lot of times I know that they will try to pretend like they're being fair. She didn't even pretend. Didn't snap up one of the other guys.
Yeah, I mean, her excuse was, well, we need this to help protect, you know, prevent fraud and, you know, donors from California to try to protect them. And, I mean, it was thinly veiled, poorly argued, and, you know, thankfully the judge saw right through that. But yeah, they tried to offer some sort of minimal excuses. But, you know, if you listen to not just Kamala Harris, but unfortunately President Obama, you know, Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, you know, a lot of folks like that, I mean, they're very clear that, you know, they hate organizations that espouse views that are run contradictory to, you know, what their socialist vision is for America, and they want to silence those folks. They want to use the power of government to go after their political enemies.
and it's not going to probably get any better anytime soon. So how does your organization figure it? Well, I don't know. Could get better.
On a federal level, I think it's going to get.
You never know.
It's going to get trimmed.
How did you guys get involved in this with the Hispanic Leadership Fund?
Sure. Well, we've been a strong advocate for First Amendment rights from our inception. We've been involved in actually a couple different court cases. One at the state level in New York, fairly strong election law case up in New York a couple years ago, and also at the federal level, we were involved in when Chris Van Hollen, who is a member of Congress from Maryland, and at the time he was chairman of one of the Democrat campaign committees, they tried to pass, when the Democrats were in control of the House, they tried to pass what's called the Disclose Act to try to, you know, get to some of the same these same points that Kamala Harris is trying to make. They tried to do that legislatively twice. Twice they failed to have this pass into law in Congress. And then the Supreme Court also struck down some very similar limitations. And so what they couldn't do legislatively and what the Supreme Court had knocked down, he went and decided that he wanted to try to sue the Federal Election Commission to try to force them to unilaterally change their rules to get what he wanted. And, you know, we saw this for what it was and filed a motion to intervene, which in the case, which is, I'm not a lawyer, but essentially you sort of step in as a defendant, even though you're not directly named in the lawsuit. So we filed this motion to intervene. The court accepted it. And, you know, our interest is, we know that among the folks that they're going to target are minority organizations that espouse different views that they do, because that is one of the biggest threats to their political power that they see. When you have Hispanic, African American, or Asian organization that has views that defend liberty, prosperity, free markets, that is a huge threat.
Blows their whole narrative.
It's a big lobby, and they don't need that kind of talk going on.
You guys are supposed to be liberal, and you just didn't.
Absolutely.
You just didn't get the memo.
That's right. That's right. Well, I got the memo, but I tore it to shreds. I mean, we saw this and we saw the writing on the wall and said, you know what? In addition to, you know, the Charles and David Koch and, you know, that kind of stuff, I mean, very high on their list of targets are, again, minority organizations that have different political views than they do. And so we said, you know, we're going to grab this bull by the horns. We're going to step in. We're going to file this motion to intervene. We're going to defend this case. And we did successfully twice in federal court. Most recently in January, there was a substantial victory for our side in federal court. And so, you know, we've taken a strong interest in this. We will continue to do so. And we congratulate Americans for Prosperity Foundation and their recent victory. And we want to make sure that we do everything we can to call attention to these efforts. Because, again, it's just so far out of bounds that I think even folks who may disagree with us on, you know, whether it's taxes or energy or labor policy or anything else, hopefully the majority of those folks can at least see that we should not be suppressing freedom of speech for people who we disagree with. That's just far, far out of bounds.
Sure. And when you, I guess there are a lot of people, however, who cannot seem to make the connection between belonging to, donating to an organization and that being free speech. You know, if it's not literally words coming out of your mouth, it's not considered free speech. And I'm sure you've had to debate those people more than once.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really kind of bizarre because, I mean, you know, imagine if you said you have freedom of the press, but if you spend money on your right to exercising your right to freedom of the press, then you no longer have that right. I mean, it's just so weird.
If you sell the newspaper, it's not freedom of the press anymore.
Right. I mean, it's a bizarre thing, and I think just some folks are just can't get their heads around the fact that, you know, some people aren't going to see the world the way you do. And again, that's why we have the political process. That's why we have, you know, the sort of the representative government that we're supposed to have, is so that we can hash out these debates.
Sure.
And have this, you know, exercise through the democratic process, but not through using the power of government as a hammer to hit your political opponents over the head with. That's just something that we see in third world dictatorships and banana republics. I mean, that's not something that we should ever want here, again, regardless of which side of the fence you're on.
Yeah, when you debate these folks and you talk about that, is there any recognition that this could go the wrong way for them later?
You know, I've brought that up time and again, and they don't quite seem to get it. And, I mean, sometimes they do, but they kind of, you know, oh, well, I don't think that would happen. Or, you know, they just sort of excuse it away. But I think that that's a very strong point that I've tried to say to them is that, look, you know, we have to think about these things from a neutral perspective. We have to think about these things is what happens, okay, today, you know, President Obama's in power and he commands the IRS to go after conservative organizations. But what happens tomorrow when someone else is in power? Is, can he do the same thing? I mean, should he be going at, should he or she or whoever go, you know, be going after groups that they have political disagreements with? Again, with the power of government. I mean, it's one thing to say, listen, these guys are wrong. Their policies are terrible. Their ideas stink. I mean, whatever, you know, you
yeah.
want to say.
Yeah, that's yeah you drop that's flyers out of an airplane, take an ad out of the paper, or, you know.
Sure, exactly. But to use the power of government is just a whole new level that's just beyond the pale, frankly. Yeah. And that's something that I think on an individual level, some of my friends on the left who I've debated, you know, they kind of get that. But when it comes to, you know, debates in public on radio or TV or something, they always, it makes them kind of squirm, but they refuse to somehow acknowledge that that's a possibility.
Oh, it just couldn't happen? This instance, it's okay, but it'll never happen again to them?
Yeah, I mean, it's,
huh. Well, okay.
It's really
well,
bizarre.
How do you,
bizarre.
Yeah, how do you respond to that? You're like, okay, I have to go now.
Right.
I have a personal policy. I don't debate crazy people.
I have a list to make up here.
Yeah, I mean, they just change the topic back to the old, you know, the money, politics, and corporations, and this and that, you know. I mean, they love to hate on corporations, but labor unions, you know, that's okay.
They're magical,
you know,
yeah.
Labor unions who steal money, many times unwillingly from, you know, workers who might not want to be part of that labor union, you know, stealing their money and using that in the political process, that's okay. But people who voluntarily give to an organization like ours or like AFP or, you know, any number of other organizations.
That's wrong.
No, that's evil.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, how do you have it? How long are these debates? Like 5 minutes? They're pretty quick, kind of in and out. I can't imagine having to...
show and, you know, and all that, but...
Well, that's nutty. I can't. It's funny that you didn't have to sue anybody over this. Ridiculous. We need to take a really quick break. Hey, when we come back, we don't know a lot about your organization, and I think you wind up being kind of an unsung hero a little bit. So before we get off the air, we want to make sure we plug you guys and get all your good contact information and stuff. We noticed your Facebook page is a little bit old. Maybe you'll have better contact for us. Got people trying to look you up and they can't find you. We'll be right back talking to Mario Lopez from. Oh, sorry, the words are starting on the song. Gotta go.
All the good things have been taken, but girl, there are ways to make certain things pay. So I'm dressed in these reds, I wear sable.
I didn't remember saying shut up now, but that's good. Alrighty, we're here with Mario Lopez. He's the president of the Hispanic Leadership Fund. They're an advocacy organization dedicated to promoting limited government, individual liberty, and free enterprise. Super fun. And they helped to beat Kamala Harris on a, I don't know, suppression of speech case, a free speech case.
And by the way, the show The Other Mario Lopez is on is Extra.
Oh.
Not Entertainment Tonight.
Oh, so Mario, unless the checks come from Extra, don't cash them. They're fake.
I'll cash any check. It doesn't matter where it comes from.
I'm telling Kamala Harris.
It's got my name on it. I'm cashing it.
There you go.
So what other fun stuff do you guys do?
Sure. Well, we're involved. You mentioned the basic principles that we defend, and we want to do a couple things. We want to communicate how those principles and how public policy and laws based on those principles are beneficial for all Americans. Obviously, we have a particular interest in communicating that to Latinos and Hispanics across the country, whether it's in states like California, Texas, or Florida, or other states where the population is growing, like North Carolina, Ohio, for example, and other states. So we're involved in the political process at the federal level and in those in other states that I mentioned. And we also want to make sure that we're reaching policymakers, legislators, members of Congress, to educate them as to how they can reach those constituencies and also, encourage them to take their message, folks who we agree with, obviously, to take their message to those communities because, the demographics of the country are changing and we want to make sure that we keep the American dream alive for anyone who wants to avail themselves of that opportunity. And we think that it's really important to communicate these principles to Americans of all backgrounds.
Well, see, it's funny because if you watch the news, it looks like, if I just told people that I was having someone on the air from the Hispanic Leadership Fund, they would figure you were a wholly owned subsidiary of the left. Because that's what we're all led to believe, that there are no conservative folks, that like your organization just couldn't possibly be real.
Right, right. Well, we are, I can assure you that.
I know, it's exciting.
We love having those debates with folks. And, I've been in front of audiences, a lot of different audiences at the community level sometimes the initial response is a bit of skepticism. But once we start getting into, the real substance of debates, whether it's parental choice for schools or low taxes, or policies, what can really help jumpstart the economy in terms of helping small businesses, for example, which we know are still the engine of economic growth for our great country. Small businesses create the majority of new jobs by a long shot, actually. And Hispanics, it just so happens, start small businesses at a rate three times that of the general population.
Oh, wow.
And so, absolutely. And so, any issue from an economic perspective that impacts small business, which is to say pretty much all of them, those are all tremendous opportunities to educate folks and to, sort of show them what works and what doesn't work. And at the end of the day, I think that that's what we really have going for us is the fact that free market policies work and socialist policies fail. And that's a truth that you can see in any number of countries, in any number of instances. And that's something that I think is very powerful. And so usually by the end of the talk, you have a lot of people nodding their head and kind of saying, okay, I see that. But the issue, unfortunately, for our side has been, that a lot of times people just don't get this message. They just haven't had anyone explain things to them and walk them through this. And to the extent that they've had folks, address them about politics and policy, it usually is someone from the left.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's this tremendous need and thirst, I think, for information and for truth out there. We try to give them a little bit of that, and I think that we're successful, and I love doing it. So, it's a great battle to be a part of.
That's awesome, because out here in California, I mean, the demographic has obviously shifted a lot. I don't know where the biggest shift is in the country, because I happen to live here, so we follow this pretty, daily. What advice would you give California to get with the program, because we're losing it?
Right. Well, I think that the big thing, again, is just engaging folks. And, it's nice to have to just kind of address an audience with someone who looks a little like them. I mean, I think that that's can never really hurt. But at the same time, I encourage, folks who agree with me politically to not let it stop them if it's, if just because the audience might look a little bit different or something. Because the principles that we believe in are universal. Liberty, prosperity, opportunity, the things enshrined in the Constitution, those things are universal truths. And the founders spell that out very, very clearly, I think, and gave us a great set of talking points to use in the Constitution and the defense of the Constitution that they laid out, so many years ago. And so I'd say that, you have to engage, you have to show up, be willing to defend your principles. I really admire politically Jack Kemp, one of my heroes from back in the day, and I'll date myself, a little bit, but I remember, growing up reading a little bit about him, and then as I got older and more involved politically, reading more. And I love the fact that he was someone who was willing to stand on any street corner in this country, in any neighborhood, and explain why free market principles were better for people in that neighborhood, for them and their families, and demonstrate to people how that was the case, and to speak truth to them. And that's something I think that we need more of, because once people, when we have those committed messengers, and once people understand and really get that, I think there's a lot of power there, because the other side only offers division. They only offer government dependency. Vote for us and we'll take care of you. I mean, that's the socialist way. And that's something that I think, once you sort of rattle the cage a little bit and get people to kind of to see where you're coming from and are willing to explain it to them and to not just stop, after a couple seconds or if you get a tough question, then you will see results. And we have seen that in candidates who have been willing to do that in a number of races. Most famously, President George W. Bush, who, whether one agrees or disagrees, I mean, he showed up in those neighborhoods. He was committed. He didn't stop after just one or two times. He kept at it, and it yielded tremendous results for him in both of his elections.
Yeah, I didn't really remember that, but yeah, you're right. And we've got to do that again, because it's getting really...
He won 44% of the Hispanic vote nationally in his reelection bid in 2004.
No kidding.
44%. So here's the other part of this, is that not only is it desirable and a nice and great thing to do, but politically, frankly, it's necessary, because, you just can't win the White House without having a certain number of the Hispanic vote. And if you're going to do what Mitt Romney did, which is fall all the way to 20, 26, 25%, that's just not good enough. And it just doesn't add up mathematically to 270 electoral votes, which is what you need. So again, it's just, it's not just a nice thing to do politically. We have to do this for folks who believe in the political values that we share.
Sure. Yeah. We have to make it meaningful for more people. And I think really I think you're right. Once you explain it to people, I think they see themselves there. I don't think they really want to, sit around and have half of what their neighbor doesn't have, so that everybody has the same amount and we can all, raise $3 for Bernie I mean, I just think that I think at the end of the day that's a tough sell. Although I did see a Cadillac yesterday with "Feel the Burn" on the back, and I'm like, could that just be confusing? Or and then I looked down and on the bumper that was actually on the trunk. Now see, if I have a Cadillac, I'm definitely putting a bumper sticker right on the paint. For starters, but then like down on the bumper, it was, you know, burning 2016. I'm like, okay, so I guess that was the "Feel the Burn." I thought maybe they were Forest Service employees or something. I don't know.
Limiting liberals.
Yeah, you just never know. I need to take one more quick
constant
break.
Constant state of confusion.
I know. It's a constant state of what the heck
it's
happened?
Gotta hurt.
How did this happen? we'll be right back.
I love being on with you guys. Thank you so much.
Yeah, because we're goof-offs. Is that it? Is that the allure?
Well, I mean, you know.
I know. We could be all serious and everything, but it's so hard. we'll be right back and finish out the top of the hour with Mario Lopez, who is the president of the Hispanic Leadership Fund. It's an advocacy organization dedicated to promoting limited government, individual liberty, and free enterprise.
God, where have I heard that before?
Oh, good stuff.
Huh.
Be right back.
People.
Cause we can't see eye to eye. There ain't no good guys. There ain't no bad guys. There's only you and me, and we just disagree.
That should be like the theme song right now. It's like our whole country's theme song. Good one. So you're rejoining We the People Radio. You can find all of our information online, wethepeopleradio.us. And, all right, Mario, we have like a million questions here. Of course, we've waited till the last five minutes. We're bad. So we have someone in the chat room wanted to know, when you talk about the Hispanic vote, when you use that term, is that like first generation, second generation? Is that just everyone whose nationality tracks that way? What does that mean to you?
Sure. I mean, well, we want to reach anyone who self-identifies as Hispanic. And so that could be, you know, that could be a recent immigrant. That could be a first-generation American. It could be someone whose family has been here for a couple hundred years. It really varies. But really, it's self-identification, I think, is the easiest way to do that, because it's just, you know, if you see yourself as Hispanic or Latino, then of course, you know, we want to make sure that you're being spoken to, that the principles that you and I and the three of us here talking share are communicated to those folks.
Now, where does immigration fit in on this whole thing? Does it just throw a monkey wrench into the whole deal?
Wow. Well, we've spent a long time today talking about the First Amendment thing, and we can spend 10 times as long.
I know. I know. Sorry.
That's why we didn't mention it.
I just wondered, you know, is it just better not to go there? Does that just derail?
Well, I mean, it is a tricky subject. I think that, you know, a lot of people are tripped up by this. I think that, you know, from a policy level, I'll stick to this because I think it's an important basic thing for folks to understand is, one, I mean, obviously we have to have border security. I mean, that's just a no-brainer, okay? But if we want to actually solve this problem so that we're not talking about the illegal immigration problem in 5 years and 10 years and, you know, if we want to solve this once and for all, what really we need to do is A, you know, border security, and B, fixing the legal immigration process. I think that those two things go hand in hand, because what a lot of folks don't understand is just how incredibly difficult and cumbersome it is to immigrate legally to the United States.
Right.
And I think that those are the things, and we've seen this before, actually. I mentioned about the lessons of history before. We had a guest worker program in the early 1960s. It was called the Bracero Program. and a lot of folks actually moved to California there in the Central Valley and other, you know, agriculture-heavy areas because of the Bracero program. And so what happened was, one of the many interesting things that happened is that illegal apprehensions at the border dropped 90% because people had a way to avail themselves of, they had a legal, workable legal channel to come to the United States. And so when you have those, that it's workable, again, not to, I don't think that we can necessarily replicate the Bracero program from top to bottom or anything like that, but just in terms of the power of this example is that when you have something like that that's workable, then you have a lot less illegal crossings. And the benefit in a modern day environment is that now the, your resources that you have on the border can focus on the really, really bad guys, the guys who are smuggling
or criminals
or sexual trafficking, the people who are bringing drugs and weapons and God knows what else across the border. Then, you know, you have a lot more resources that are focused on those guys who everyone, you know, understands is just, you know, bad. There's just no way around it, right? Those are just bad people. Then you have other people who, yes, they've, you know, they've broken the law, but their motivations aren't to, like, come break the law and spit on America and do all these things. Their motivation is they want a better life. And, you know, we don't encourage anyone to break the law in pursuit of that better life. That's not what we want to see. But certainly we as a country can say, hey, you know, let's have a way, you know, to sort of keep the secret sauce that is part of the secret sauce that has made America so great, which is people come here from around the world and they're motivated to succeed. Right. And so when we can channel that and you know, towards in a sort of a positive, constructive way, I think that that's when we as a country benefit.
Well, I think we've just been chock full of information. I think everyone's going to have to go home and take a nap now. We've learned all sorts.
Don't forget to wake up.
We've learned all sorts of
what's
stuff.
What's going on?
Mario, we really appreciate your time today. And we celebrate with you the First Amendment victory against Kamala Harris.
Yeah, absolutely.
Any victory
good
against
job.
Kamala Harris is a good one. She's a dope.
There we go. Thank you guys so much. Really enjoyed the time with you.
It goes fast because we goof off a little bit. So that we've been interviewing Mario Lopez. Actually, he's just been telling us stuff, not really interviewing him all that much. He is the president of the Hispanic Leadership Fund. You can find all that information and a bunch more stuff at wethepeopleradio.us. Thanks, Mario. Thanks, guys. See you next week.